This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Tis the season to recall that miserable old humbug Ebenezer Scrooge from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. We all know the story. Scrooge repents his greedy ways after visits from the spirit world and learns the true message of Christmas. But what happened next? Did Ebenezer keep his sunny new attitude, or did he revert to his grumpy old self? What happened to his beleaguered employee, Bob Cratchit? And then there's Cratchit's disabled son, Tiny Tim. Whatever happened to him? The question was on the mind of writer Nick Meglin, who created a sort of sequel to A Christmas Carol. It's called Tim and Scrooge, A Carol for a Later Christmas, and it picks up with the not-so-tiny Tim 12 years after the events of the original story. The musical will be produced at the Open Space Cafe Theater in Greensboro, December 8th through the 18th. Nick Meglin is with us in the studio now, and before he took on this project, Nick was the longtime editor of Mad Magazine. Nick, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Nice to be back.
What possessed you to write a sequel to A Christmas Carol?
Well, you know, I was really hypnotized almost by that wonderful 1950s film version of A Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim as Scrooge. And, you know, the corny old story really worked with when he did it. And I was kind of taken up with how moving it could be and what happened to Scrooge and Tiny Tim, et cetera, after that, just as you've asked in your introduction, that I thought there was a story there. The big problem was taking on Dickens. I certainly did not want to compete with Dickens. I couldn't compete with Dickens, and I'm not a novelist. So, but in musical theater, which is my main love, I thought a musical based on it, I could get away with that conceit of saying, hey, I'm gonna follow through. And the end result worked that way. A lot of people asked me after the Queen's Theater production where I found the notes or the unpublished manuscript of Dickens. I said, wow, I succeeded in capturing the flavor that Dickens would have done.
Did you feel like you had to move the story forward, that you had to pay attention to the characters he created in creating the sequel, or could you start with whole cloth?
Well, it wasn't whole cloth at all, because he set the tone for my show, which was really based on an idea that I had, which was very, very contemporary. I knew a friend whose father worked very, very hard in a business, an old-fashioned business in the garment district of New York, and succeeded in getting his son to go to like Harvard Business School or something. And the kid graduates, and the father thought, hey, he'll now take over the business. I can finally retire. And he says, are you kidding? I want to be a CEO of a big organization. I don't want to do that stuff. And what happens with that dilemma? So it's a very modern theme that's going on here, because Tim inherits Scrooge's business, but he just wants to teach. He wants to marry a gal that they don't even know about, Allison. And she was an orphan as a result of unscrupulous businessmen who stressed her parents out so much she became an orphan and has no love for business. And Tim inheriting this business is only a dilemma. So Scrooge, who has now passed on, has unknowingly to Tim left him the business. So that's his dilemma. That's the crux of the show.
And he has to make this decision. And his father, of course, is still grappling with the past. We have a clip here from a production that was done in New York. This is a recording that actually was done in New York. We have actor Bob Scheffler as Bob Cratchit in this New York production of Tiny Tim and Scrooge.
There's 1, 2, 3 scraps of bread. Children must be fed. 2, 3, 4 bits of coal, and then the fire is dead. 4, 5 coffins lined the way, as they did the week before. Who will stop and fall that day, and tomorrow be no more? The pain
The Way It Was Then from the musical Tim and Scrooge, A Carol for a Later Christmas. That was a recording done a few years ago with a cast in New York. You can see a local production of Tim and Scrooge on stage at the Open Space Cafe Theater in Greensboro, December 8th to the 18th. Former Mad Magazine editor Nick Meglin wrote the book and the lyrics, and he's with us now. And in that, of course, is the father's dilemma, Bob Cratchit, who worked very hard to get his son where he was, and now the kid's going to throw it all away.
Well, in writing a show, the process is a long process if you have the chance, and I've had the chance because the productions have been years between them. But, you know, there's such a difference from the page to the stage. You can write things that you think really work, and then when you see them on the stage, they don't. And at the Queen's production, which went over very well, the one thing that was a weakness of the show was that the father, Tim, Bob Cratchit, sings this to Tim as to why he must take over the business, because he's haunted by poverty and he doesn't want his son to relive his horror, you know. And it made Tim's decision that he doesn't want the business seem very petulant, seem very, very cold of Tim. So now I've had the ability, thanks to Joe Nearly, he's the artistic director and director of this at Open Space Theater, to put that song as a dark solo, so that he's haunted and he sings it as a solo on a darkened stage, and Tim doesn't hear this, and he doesn't know how much it means to him. So that's why he gets involved in getting these, again, these wicked businessmen who con him into becoming partners without him realizing it.
And we said that you wrote the book and the lyrics. You should maybe tell us what that means and the relationship, because that doesn't always happen, that the lyricist isn't always the person who wrote the script.
That's very rare. Sometimes when you get a master, a genius like a Stephen Sondheim who write the words and music, they'll do that. But seldom the book. Sondheim has never wrote the book. To me, it was an easy process because as a lyricist, that's my major talent, I think. As a lyricist, the songs come from the book. But since there was no book, I created the book to do the lyrics, and it worked backwards and forth. But the interesting thing about writing lyrics is that's what attracted Joe Nearly to want to do this project. But the truth of the matter is nobody walks out of a theater humming the lyrics. It's the music. And Neil Berg's marvelous compositions for this. I mean, that's what really is the foundation of the show. Once I partnered with Neil, it became a lot easier to write songs that would move us or push us in the directions we wanted to go.
And you've worked with him before.
No, this was our first project. Grumpy Old Men, which just opened in Winnipeg, is still a work in progress, and hopefully a touring company will be picking that up, and it'll be in New York. It'll be not in New York. We don't want New York. In New York, once it dies, it's dead. You know, we have a touring company interested in, we're working on that show, but it had a wonderful launch in Winnipeg last month, October.
Now, you said we talked a little bit about Dickens and your relationship with that and trying to stay faithful to Dickens. When you take a character like Ebenezer Scrooge in particular, he's in the play, albeit as a dead guy. He comes back.
Oh, he's the main three. It's the trio, really. It's Ebenezer Scrooge, and he's going to be played wonderfully by he's a theatrical teacher in Elon College right there. And Elon, the musical theater department's wonderful. And he's Scrooge, and he played Man of La Mancha for them last year. And Max Korn, a local up-and-rising singer, actor in the neighborhood. And Elena De Angelis, I saw several times in operas. She's a young lady who's wonderful. She's his love interest, Allison.
Well, let's listen to Ebenezer Scrooge in that New York production.
What I once believed was humbug wasn't humbug in the least, and my life of deprivation that was ended, finished, ceased. What had been an empty table has become a kingly feast. Once I learned that life is loving, once I learned that love is giving, love is what makes life worth living. Everything else is humbug.
Humbug from a musical production of Tim and Scrooge, A Carol for a Later Christmas. Again, that recording a few years ago in New York. You can see the local production in Greensboro, December 8th through the 18th at the Open Space Cafe. You write these characters, create these characters. What's the role of Scrooge in this play?
Well, when Scrooge learns of his dilemma, he realizes the way the ghosts came back to help transform him, he's got to now go back and resolve a dilemma, because poor Tim is left with his baggage, you might say. He doesn't want it, and he wants everything for Tim because he has maintained his role as a transformed Scrooge. He's loving, and because of that, Tim has grown healthy. He's paid for his education and all of this. And now he gets Jacob Marley, the senior ghost, to help him make a visitation. And the clip that you just heard is what he sings to Scrooge. It opens the second act when this is the first time he allows Tim to see him. In the first act, he's throughout the first act, and he does things and all, and he has these conversations with Jacob Marley up in celestial areas. What happens with the second act is he makes himself visible to Tim, who doesn't believe in ghosts, and finally he's convinced, and then the two of them work out the resolution.
So it's a little bit Christmas Carol and a little Hamlet thrown in.
Oh, and maybe King Lear, too. By the way, I didn't know if I mentioned, he deserves to mention Richard Gang as the professor of theater in Elon, who's the Scrooge. He's wonderful.
You're a guy who's spent most of his career editing gags for Mad Magazine, famous for its composition, It's a Gas. How long have you been thinking about doing musical? This is really important to you, this kind of thing. And this is something people don't really know about you, because there's a magazine that appealed a lot to adolescent boys and the rest of us who are now in our 50s still. But the fact is, you have always been a guy who's wanted this kind of mainstream, good old-fashioned musical, right?
Absolutely. It was always my first love. I was writing songs with a different composer before that, standards. But the rock era made the performers more the writers than anything else. So actual writers had no chance of breaking in. We had a few things produced, not too important songs. But what happened is I was always good at doing the parody lyrics, which we would do in Mad Magazine and the Mad books and stuff. But Mad has a sensibility all its own, and we know that. And it's very, it's controversial and makes people think and look at satirical. You know, we'll take on everybody, and we did. But, you know, that's what I did very well. I was a funny kid from Brooklyn, but so was every other kid on the street corner. I thought they were all funny from Brooklyn. I didn't know I had any special talent above and beyond what they had. But what I had was a sensibility towards theater, because I love drama and I love musical comedy, and the combination, that's who I am. Mad is what I did, and you know, it's hurt me through the years, Frank, because a lot of people prejudge what they're going to see based on my Mad reputation. As Mad Editor, they figured it's off the wall. No, that's Spamalot. That's terrific. I love Spamalot, but that's not what I do. This is more like, you know, Lerner and Lowe. This is more My Fair Lady and more like, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
You live in an irony-free zone in a lot of ways. It's a straight-up musical. Well, what about the musical these days? It seems like either there's the huge production that makes its way with lots of effects, but the kind of stripped-down, simple, great lyric, great song, is there a future for that, do you think?
I doubt it, you know. In your description of me just now, what you really didn't say was that reality, I'm a dinosaur, and we all are. And someone, said, Stephen Sondheim has always been a hero to all of us because he set the bar so high, a lot of us can slip underneath. But Sondheim even has trouble getting meaningful musicals done because it's not the kind of music that we hear every day on the radio. Or on the television programs, you know. Sondheim never wrote a song, nor will I, Neil Berg and I, write a song that's going to be on Dancing with the Stars, you know. More like Bowling for Dollars.
You mentioned that film version in the 1950s. Is that your favorite rendition of Christmas Carol?
Both on stage or on film, yes, because, they had the benefit of the close-ups, which, of course, page to stage is different for the movies as it is for the theater.
I guess that's another problem for these big musicals is that, I mean, it cost a lot of money to put on.
Well, that's because of Star Wars and everything else. People don't want to spend all that money for a ticket and then not see special effects. It's a special effects rather than music now, and rather than wholesome, strong story writing. It's not the best time that musical is going through, but I think it'll survive.
What are you working on now?
Well, again, we're now in the process of retooling Grumpy Old Men now that we've finally had a production that gives us the page to stage to see what we've done, and we see the weaknesses and how we have to move along on that. But then I've started my third musical, oh, a good 15 years ago. It's been back burner, but it's about Madison Avenue in the 50s and 60s. And that's more like a How to Succeed in Business type of musical.
Well, now you got Mad Men to connect that to.
So I hope it doesn't hurt, because then people will start going and saying, oh, it's another Mad Men, and it's not.
Well, I mean, Spamalot was took a TV show from the 60s in England and brought it back. So that's all good. So any plans for another sequel to A Christmas Carol? We could.
No, I think I buried the story. let it go and rest in peace.
Nick, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks so much. Nick Meglin wrote Tim and Scrooge, A Carol for a Later Christmas. The production is at the Open Space Cafe Theater in Greensboro. You can see it December 8th through the 18th, and you can find out more at osctheater.com. Theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. And that's the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org. You can find a link to a calendar of events mentioned on this show. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Robin Copley is the technical director. The managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. And our senior producer is Susan Davis. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.